Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are. Oh, I see. It's quirky. There's wild storms coming, but I think we're okay. Yes, we are. We're stabilizing. There we go. In all realms. Okay, so welcome, team. We are honoring Indigenous prophecy teased into guiding pertinence for us now. So I welcome Jerome McGeorge for part two of Indigenous Prophecy, Warning and Guiding, and the whole realm of indigenuity, a wonderful word coined by Curtis Mataba and given to his mentor Dan Wildcat and given to Bob Goff, who then reported it to me. And then here we are, indigenuity. So Jerome will put much of his worthy cred on the table that invites him to be a messenger from the Kogi, the Hopi, the wolf-teaching clan into which he was initiated by Twyla Nitch, the Council of Grandmothers, and more, inviting into our world guiding, sane reverence that we may protect as much flora, fauna, fungi as possible, and that it may dissolve the cuckoo cartoon of cruel crackpot humanity. As we know, Jerome McGeorge, fellow anarcho-astro-animist, enviro-farmer, wizard, is the co-founder of Organic Valley. He's a longtime ally of the Kogi in Colombia. We spent time on that last week and more now, with whom he spent much time, right? Was chosen by them to be their guide on their first trip to America, October 20th to November 5th, sponsored by Organic Valley. Yay! An investigative mission of discovery, bringing messages of wisdom, warning, and mutual aid. Welcome, Jerome.
Well, glad to be with the KPFA audience of allies, and I would continue our discussions of Native American prophecy and culture from last week with another message from the Kogi elders. Among indigenous tribes worldwide, the Kogi really represent a most complete surviving civilization of long ago America. At Old Village, a Kogi world house has been in use for over 10,000 years. In a sharing from the Kogi Mamos, in continuation of the messages last week, I offer from the beginning in our homeland in Colombia, everything remained as it always was among us. The native people, the same belief, the same mask, the same dance. Everything well organized. A terrace for every animal. Younger brother was permitted to be in other places, other countries. There was a dividing line, the ocean. Younger brother, that side. Elder brother, this side. You cannot cross it because this Columbia was the heart of the world. But now we can no longer look after this world alone. The younger brother is doing too much damage. He must see and understand and assume responsibility. Now we will have to work together. Otherwise, the world will die. I would add that everything dies, including planets and stars and galaxies. Additionally, a history of the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta, which was compiled with Kogi cooperation, I am reading some excerpts that describe the current damage. A paradise of biodiversity is disappearing in the face of ignorance and under the chainsaw of the legendary and exuberant Sierra Nevada. Only 15% of the original forests remain, while there are advanced stages of devastation and erosion, sometimes irreversible. Water supplies have reduced so abruptly that small rivers and tributaries have completely disappeared, and the remaining source of water is in danger of extinction. Perhaps this common crisis can become a means of recognition of common interests, where all groups will learn from nature's lesson. That I want to say in this continuation that I am not a Native American. However, I have been chosen as a messenger of the prophecies and culture that in 1998, I was interviewed after being selected by Kogi and Arhuaco shamans to lead a delegation to deliver messages from elder brother to younger brother in Washington, D.C. We had ceremonies there and were recognized by a presidential letter from Bill Clinton, and we were entertained at the Mott House in Washington, D.C. in a celebration of the messages that were being delivered from the Kogi, the elder brothers. I have, over 18 years, gone to Tairona homeland in Colombia at least a dozen times. Today, I want to begin to add other Native American messages and to start with the Hopi elders. In 1948, a group of Hopi elders determined to issue warnings from their prophecies. Here is a more recent message from the Hopi elders. We have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now, you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relations? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth, to create your community. Be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for a leader. This would be a good time, and there is a river flowing fast now. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel that they are being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. No, the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore and push off and into the river. Keep our eyes open and our head above water. See who is in there with us and celebrate at this time in history. We are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolves is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that you do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration.
Let me chirp in and then hand it back to you. I first heard that from Chakosh, a wonderful ally, just a wave out to Chakosh, who put that to chanting and music. And I'd forgotten, and it's wonderful that you're bringing it alive, that it says banish the word struggle. I love that. When people say I've been struggling with this issue for years, it's like, well, what does it feel like if you replace the word struggle with dancing? It's a much more, there we go, spiraling kind of thing. But yeah, and then just briefly, and then I hand it back to you because you have so much prepared, bless your wonderful ally heart. Mercury, the messenger, within and without, has just stationed to go forward at 21 plus Leo, whose image is a carrier pigeon training for an important mission, right? And it just, what you're resonating in all of our hearts is, yeah, everyone, we've all come to do something, right? And to, to cleanse ourselves of conniption fits and reactivity, and to dedicate to fulfilling our mission. I just wanted to chime in with that little bit of astrology and then we'll to and fro, but I know you have a feast really prepared for us. So wherever you want to go, Jerome, I have notes and squibbles and all kinds of things, much that we want to get to, and we'll see if we do.
Well, I would continue that at that old village Kogi World House, I was interviewed in the company of a couple hundred Native American Tairona people and dozens of the Kogi Arwako shamans. And this was before I was to lead the first ever delegation to America to bring their message to younger brother in Washington, D.C. We also, in the near month-long journey, crossed the country to the West Coast and were with at least a dozen other tribes on the West Coast, including the very interesting seven tribes reservation in state of Washington. There are seven tribes at this reservation because each of those surviving tribes was too small to support a reservation. That while we were there, and it was to be part of a tribal council meeting, and as we left the tribal council meeting, we were walking towards a place where we were going to have lunch and ceremony, and I was with the three-part delegation named Margarita, Rogelio, and Danilo, and we were following two of the tribal council members, and without them knowing, we could overhear them. One of the tribal council members observed to the other, "It's about time we had some real Indians here." That in my adventures in Native America land, they began at a call after President Jimmy Carter in 1980 had announced a separation of lands to be preserved, to be protected from further development, and it was an extensive set-aside. At the same time, President Carter announced that implied, or even was an imperative, that we designate certain areas as national sacrifice areas, and the first area that was designated for this sacrifice area development was the Black Hills of South Dakota in Native American Lakota, the Paha Sapa, the Black Hills. Immediately, the Lakota peoples organized and sent out organizing messages to the world. I, with my mother and my son and daughter, attended the International Survival Gathering in 1980, and so did another 3,000 to 4,000 people from tribes, not only North America, but in Central and South America, and Africa and Asia. The International Survival Gathering was followed by a Lakota encampment to protect the Black Hills from becoming a national survival, a national sacrifice area.
What do you mean a national sacrifice area? What could you clarify what that means?
That means that in the Carter message of the set aside of significant land for protection, he designated this term national sacrifice area. And at that time, 1980, well, the beginning of 1980, and of course, this is messaging coming out of his last year of his presidency, 1980, that they had been developing. But the National Sacrifice Area is a presidential Carter designation. And it was he, and thus causing the Lakota to take it very seriously and begin a worldwide effort to protect the Black Hills and to prevent any such national sacrifice area activity.
But again, what does it mean, a sacrifice area, meaning it would be opened up to exploitation?
No, it means mining and drilling and turning the Black Hills inside out to gather, and of course, geologists and other scientists had identified that the Black Hills was full of what we want to call natural resources, and other Native Americans have said, what you call natural resources, we call relatives.
Right.
So
right.
This was a declaration, Caroline, of official national policy, and the Native American resistance, which was immediate, was also effective. The Black Hills were never, they have been developed to some extent, but not in any way this designation of national sacrifice area.
Aside from the horrible white people faces on carved into the stone, but yes, you'd mentioned at this 1980 survival gathering in the Black Hills that your honored and my beloved buddy and all of ours, Vine Deloria Jr., was there, right? And I just want to take a little moment here for all of us to participate in what you're laying forth. You know, we're all in one guiding narrative. You know, larger living forces are suffusing the political, which we choose to define as simply a dedication to collective well-being. So on July 21st, 2024, full moon, you know, sun in Cancer, Big Mama, opposite moon in Capricorn, that protection of life move into the structures of governance. And then we had the August 19th full moon, the ritual, again, the political being suffused with the mythological, imperfect though it is, you know. And now here we are, when the moon in Cancer in the eighth house of ancestral download trines Saturn. Much to say about that, but before I hand you back the baton, I just like the idea of let's all see a boat. You know, it's like Dion Fortune in World War II, hired by the British government to do ritual to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion, she said, it's not prophecy. It's just as if we were standing on a bluff overlooking the sea. We can see a boat coming into shore sooner than those on shore can see it. And I love that image. And so for us now, and then as you can further animate, let's see a boat sailing into shore. And who and what is on that boat from the spirit ancestral realms? And I go, Vine Deloria Jr., you know, Twyla Nitch, whom you can introduce us to, all the warning and guiding mentors, human and otherwise, Harriet Tubman, all right, with her participatory animism, Fannie Lou Hamer, Emma Goldman, Abe Lincoln. I mean, everybody just to participate through radio magic and like, who and what is on that boat that we standing on a bluff can see coming into shore to help us out? So, and I hand it back to you, Brother Jerome, Geronimo, as you were called by Rogalio. So that's wonderful. But so I like seeing Vine, and I just want to bring up his medicine. He was such a great human, Aries, Scorpio rising, March 26, 1933, 8:42 p.m. in Martin, South Dakota. So spicy and dark, funny and welcoming and inclusive, critical. Again, the medicine of super critical, Scorpio rising, with a kind, fierce heart. I just want to bring that in. He saw the sketchy, and he chose to love it anyway. I just wanted to bring him in, and so much complexity of what he had to say. I met him at the Indigenous Star Lore conference that he organized in Boulder, Colorado, some ways back, you know. And I just remember there was a moment where the Indians were like, what are these white people doing here? And Vine said, well, you put me in an awkward position because I invited them. And then the Indians were like, well, why are they talking about Native American Star Lore? And he said, well, because some of them have been apprenticing for 20 years with with Indigenous Star Lore teachers. And I keep trying to get young Native Americans interested, but they're playing video games. So we welcome everyone in complexity and transcend our harumphitude. Let us be welcoming. Anyway, so that was a fine navigational moment for his fierce, inclusive self. Back to you. Well, and then Twyla Nitch, I know you have, I don't want to interrupt your order, which is so wonderful. So go anywhere you want at any time, you know, but if you wanted to bring in Twyla as somebody we might see on the boat coming in, that would be fun.
Caroline, you remind me of many things immediately. I would say about Vine Deloria, a wonderful historian, and certainly not only did I read Vine Deloria, he a real teacher, and two of his texts give some indication of what a spicy guy he could be. One text more famous, and many of the listeners might know, Custer Died for Your Sins, a Vine Deloria text, but another text that I love, and it's so well titled, We Talk, You Listen.
That's, yeah.
That is a Vine Deloria expression, so typical. You bring up Twyla Nitch, whose native name is Ye-Ne-Wo-De, and Ye-Wo-De translates as she whose voice rides with the wind. Twyla was a clan mother of the Seneca Nation, the western edge of the Iroquois Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Twyla was a leader of the Wolf Clan Teaching Lodge, into which I was initiated and given my native name, Twyla's an initiatory name, Hoshaaz, which she pointed out means he who recalls. that some of my 40 years plus study of Native American culture and prophecy is an exercise in being in recall of, I am a passionate and deep believer in reincarnation. That is another subject that we won't go into today, but that Twila and many Native American nations, as well as a majority of the 8 billion souls alive today, believe in reincarnation. It is to understand that the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, are very exclusive in their teaching. We only have one life to live.
Wait a minute, let me chime in for two seconds here. Reincarnation and astrology, I mean, reincarnation was part of Christian Catholic doctrine until, I forgot, I don't know if it was the Council of Trent, I can't remember which council, in which it was booted out.
Well, and also
booted
the Council
out.
Of Nicaea.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so it was in there until
It was at those two councils, 300 years after Christ was crucified, that they voted on the doctrine of Mary was a virgin. We do know from history that Joseph and Mary had older siblings once the Christ child was born. So the doctrine of Mary being a virgin is a questionable doctrine, and it was male priests at the Council of Trent and Nicaea that both broke out of the doctrine of one life to live from reincarnate thinking, and also propagated the Mary was a virgin birth. That is historically accurate. That in addition, the Iroquois have a doctrine, a structure that is the Kaya Narankawa. We, in our historical literature available in English, translate the Kaya Narankawa as the Iroquois Confederacy structure given by the peacemaker Daganoweda, that we call it the Great White Law of Peace. Among other aspects of the Great White Law of Peace is there are 51 chieftainships spread through the six nations of the Iroquois Confederacy. Each of those chieftainships is represented by a group of clan mothers, that the chiefs, whenever a new chief has to be named, that after ceremony, some would say quite similar to divination, that if a new chief is named, that is the standing order. However, any of the clan mother circles can recall a chief. And furthermore, in Iroquois understanding, if the Iroquois ever had to go to war, to resort to violence for whatever reason, only could they go to war if the clan mothers named a war chief. They could not name a war chief, there could be no war. That is an exemplary facet that would be much better if practiced worldwide.
And we're going to do that now. That's a perfect setup. Wait, Jerome, because we're going to take our short musical break, or medium short musical break, Keb Moe and Roseanne Cash put a woman in charge. And Jerome has set it up perfectly for us. Don't have a conniption fit about it being a particular secular thing. It's a larger swoosh of which we're all a part of. And so as you listen to this and maybe dance to this for, oh, two-ish minutes, you know, think of what Jerome just said. You know, recall. Jerome's name, Hocha Az, sorry about the pronunciation, calling it in. We're calling in the moon, the clan mothers. So here we go with Keb Moe, Roseanne Cash, dance around, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Here we go. Maybe. Possibly. Here comes break music. We'll see. I think so. Hello, KPFA. Are you there? Oh, sound is not happening. It's a quirky time. All right, well, just hum it to ourselves then. Okay, so just recall it or play Put a Woman in Charge by Keb Moe and Roseanne Cash after the show, just to insert it in your own memory file, right? So it is a quirky time. So welcome back without the sound music. There we go. We do what we can. That's very funny. And so we are back here. Let me refresh and remind us what we're doing. We are in the middle of welcoming Jerome McGeorge for part two of Indigenous Prophecy, Warning and Guiding. And you were just setting it up for, again, the clan mothers, and who had, it was the part of democracy that the founding fathers were like, oh, you have a good system here, you Iroquois people. And they're like, yes, and the thing that makes it work is the clan mothers having the veto, certainly about war. You know, and the founding fathers are like, we forgot that part, never mind. Until now, right? And so that's part of our imagining, you know, what's coming in on the boat, right, that we see? What's coming in on the boat? Going, Vine Deloria waving at us. He was a great trickster. Not everybody is, not everybody has to be, but it is my favorite thing, meaning equal woof woof wanna play. Equal men and women, equal humans and animals and spirits, equal all of that. So I see him waving to us on the boat. No, we see the clan mothers. Anybody else, Jerome, that you want to see on the boat? Oh, Twyla Nitch, right? Who else is on the boat that we're seeing coming into shore to help us?
Well, I want to relate message from another clan mother of the Tlagi band of the Cherokee Nation, and that Gayani Uahu relates, yes. It's time for the caretakers of the earth to arise, awaken. Caretakers of the earth, awaken and arise and let things be good upon the earth. The whole essence of Native American teaching is to know that everything is our relative, and to be caretakers of the earth and one another. And that message from the Cherokee and another clan mother, Diana Uwahu, another voice of Native American culture and prophecy. I also want to point out, playing off of our discussion of the Iroquois Confederacy and the Great White Law of Peace, the Iroquois Confederacy had a great impact on especially the Constitution of the United States of America. That is another extended discussion in my over 20 years of teaching Native American culture. It has been a point of emphasis, the impact, the emphasis in the Constitution of characteristics of the Iroquois Confederacy, including, as referenced in my message of the clan mothers of the Iroquois Confederacy, that is where the idea of the Supreme Court arose, and No American leader more well-versed in the Kayan-Narankawa and Iroquois Confederacy structure than Ben Franklin. And of course, Franklin was the leader of the Constitutional Convention in 1787. That it also, in a way, the Cherokee message that I just said, I want to bring in message from the Dalai Lama and Tibetan Buddhism that is so in agreement with this discussion of indigenous cultures and their prophecies. The Dalai Lama pointed out in 1989, just after he was awarded the Nobel Prize, that his announcement was, there are four pillars of Tibetan Buddhism. It is important for the world to understand that I want to announce there is a fifth pillar of Tibetan Buddhism, and that is bone shamanism. The bone people are what the Tibetans call themselves. We are the bone people. They do not call themselves the Tibetan people. That is a designation of us non-Tibetans. And that this announcement by the Dalai Lama is so in harmony with the shamanic messages, certainly of the Kogi, but also shamans among other indigenous groups. And I want to offer, in total spirit with this discussion we are having, that Shantideva, a Tibetan Buddhist of over 1,000 years ago, a Tibetan Buddhist shaman, Shantideva said, all suffering in the world arises out of wanting happiness for self. All happiness in the world arises out of wanting happiness for others. We are in this together, and that this discussion, as the Kogi from the messages that we discussed last week, to us, the God concept is unity. And a message from a variety, diverse indigenous sources is, we are in this together. We must take care of one another. We must get over our religious and political and partisan, all the things that divide us. And as, a comment, Caroline, that I would repeat, that if messages from a variety of the prophecies, that the world might die, everything dies, including planets, stars, and galaxies.
Right. I'm gonna go back just a smidge to the Dalai Lama. A friend of mine was at one of his small talks when he first came to this country, and she said, he only said this once. Somebody asked him, well, what about Tibet's sucky karma? What's that from? And the Dalai Lama said, it's because of our terrible treatment of women. And he never said that again, but he did put it out there. And I just want to put that as part of our theme, you know, equal. You know, I love, a friend of mine said, you know, what if a matriarchy is a patriarchal concept as opposed to real equality? It would look matriarchal, the balance. And that's part of the mythos of now. I just wanted to chime that in there, equal, and Vine Deloria was very woofy about equal men and women. And my friend Virginia Daly, who studied with the Lakota for years, went to Willard Fulbull some years back and said, what is this tradition that women don't sing in the peyote or sweat lodge? And Willard Fulbull said, oh, that's a very important tradition that the men made up 30 years ago. Anyway, just so we want the trickster present, right, to disrupt, you know, any priesthood, right? Any priesthood. And I just want to say, as part of our, we get to see the boat coming in, but also part of the beauty of our now, Venus at zero Libra, holding space for the equinox sun, exactly trining Pluto at zero Libra to zero Aquarius. So we also get to participate in what do we want to throw into the cauldron? Anything unjust, anything unequal, anything in the way of democracy. I think priesthoods, I vote for priesthoods. I can feel Vine Deloria backing me up on that one, going, let's, yeah, and see, it doesn't do any harm to throw things into the cauldron. It's only replenishing, right? So let's experiment, give it a try, like priesthoods into the cauldron, APAC into the cauldron with its stranglehold on American democracy. Let's just liberate, all tyranny wants to be liberated. And I'm just going to sneak in just one last little thing and then hand you back the talking stick. Saturn, our leadership, you know, let's have tyranny take itself down, although we can help by tossing it into the cauldron. There's huge disarray in Putin's world among the military guys calling for a coup. This is not working out well. Our trains are on fire. It's an economic mayhem. So that's going on. In BB world, also there's stirring like in Trump world, right? It's like I think the idea of having Trump and J.D. Vance and RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, like put them all in a room together for a while. And I just want to spicily, and then I'll hand it back to you to smooth over things, right? In the I Ching, there's the darkest black magic. I think it's in the darkening of the light hexagram. And it's in which somebody puts five venomous creatures in a jar until one of them kills and eats the others. It says the climax of the dark times has arrived and the darkness has begun to consume itself. When negative energy is finally spent, people of intelligence and good spirit naturally reemerge and gain rightful positions. So I'm just putting in a little sizzle on behalf of it's something that Vine would have said too, just there, and then happy to hand you back the baton because there is so much that you want to bestow and recall. So there you have it. I hand it back to you. Oh wait, but you did say, I have notes from you scribbled all over the place, you know, that the Youth Initiative High School in Viroqua, you are coming to us from Viroqua, Wisconsin, a spicy mecca of egalitarian cool things. And boy, do I want to re-go to high school in Viroqua, where you said that the juniors and the seniors had were taught Native American culture, right? And you were part of that
for over 20 years, and yeah, in total agreement with what you've been expressing, Caroline, I would observe that in my own distillation, what gives me faith? What gives me hope for a better future? I have three things that certainly I want to emphasize. One, more women in leadership, more equality among the sisters and brothers. Two, as we are discussing, listen to the voice of the indigenous, of the prophecies from ancient days. And three, pay more attention to the voice of youth, that so much of what is in the way of a better future is the incredible legacy of a past that has darkened our reality. And we must renew, and listening to the voice of youth is a third of my three hopes for a better world of human affairs. That I would then, in a critical part of any indigenous prophecy, the Mayans, and especially the classic Mayan, which developed the Mayan calendar of course of many, many years of study on my part, that the Mayan prophecies, the Mayan insight into the mysteries of time. One source that is magnificent, I can recommend it to our audience, Carl Kalaman's The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness. That Kalaman points out the Mayan peering into the mysteries of time go back 16 billion years to their description of a Big Bang. Modern science wants to say the Big Bang happened more like approximately 14 billion years ago, but that is for anyone to quibble about. But in addition, there is in Mayan prophecy a great cycle that begins at 11 August 3114 BCE and ends at 21st December 2012, a period of just over 5,125 days. And in the Mayan calculations that we have discerned, and most Mayan mathematics and astronomy, we still do not understand, that the great cycle extending over that period from 3114 to 2012 is a period of 1,872,000 days, or in their language, 13 baktun. That within the great cycle that I have just described, there is a period of cycles beginning at 843 CE, and there are 13 cycles of 52 years each, which from the Mayan classical period are described as the darkening, the dimming of the light. The first period, 843 to 895, was the mystery of the classic Maya civilization shutting down. That in that first 52-year period, a majority of the classic Mayan city-states and the elite of their shamans and leadership vanished. A great mystery to history, and that there were 12 more periods leading to 1519. At 1519.
Let me chime in briefly. Wait. I'm just going to insert something quickly here. There's a fantastic, maybe the best historic novel I've ever read, called Tikal by Daniel Peters, an actual Mayan scholar and also really deep in all the ways that you would appreciate. And it takes place 843 to 895. Then. So I just want to put that in the margins for anybody who wants to read one of the best historic novels. It really puts you there in the mystery and the beauty and complexity and the seeds of tyranny that do collapse a culture. Right. Now back to you. I just had to put that in there.
Excellent addition, Caroline. So that
There is a million. I'm just going to slip in and then hand it back to you too. There's a million things there. So, my friend Dr. John Carlson, former head of archaeoastronomy at University of Maryland. You know, but he was the person who first excavated. He translates Mayan. He translated the word God, and it was way back in the mid-90s that he told me about August, I thought it was August 13th, 3114 BC, but you say August 11th, you know, tomato, tomato.
Well,
August,
that's
whatever
my
it was, 3114 BC to December 21st, 2012. And that's when it became a meme. And people who really knew stuff jumped in, and people who knew nothing jumped in. So it was one of the great complexity of, you know, New Age hoovering of ancient tradition, and he said he'd been decoding it, and he said the seven lords of time gathered on August 11th or 13th, 3114 BC, to create time, and they are reconvening yep. December 21st, 2012, you know, for the liberation of time. And he said he was translating it. He said, there's a big party. Everyone's invited, but they're not giving the address. And then some years later, he said, he called me and he said, we've translated the address. And I go, where? And he goes, it's Chichen Itza, of course. And I said, we got to go. And he said, every crackpot in the world will be there. And I go, yeah, we got to go. So we did. And again, that mediation between science people, right? And then, you know, and authentically knowledgeable mystic people and completely hoovering New Age crackpot people. It was an incredible confluence. We had a great Alfonso Escobedo. If you ever want a great Mayan guide in the Yucatan, he's the best. He's just the best. Anyway, he secured us a wonderful, wonderful place. There's much than gossip because the New Age Festival was one of the most irreverent cuckoo things ever. But so this confluence, right? Anyway, now back to you. I just had to slip in some there. There we go. And wherever you want to go with it.
In our flowing together, Caroline, I went with my daughter and we chose a wonderful Mayan guide to tour Chichen Itza. We were awestruck. And our guide could give us so much background of Chichen Itza as the magnificent monument that it is, and also so much Mayan story, prophecy in the meaning of that magnificent, among other Mayan sacred sites. And so continuing at 1519, and it is to note that that is the date of Cortez entering Veracruz and the brutal conquest of Mexico. It is also the date of Martin Luther nailing his theses to the cathedral in Wurttemberg, beginning 200 years of religious wars in Europe. At 1519, the Mayan prophecy said 13 years of dimming of the light, 13 cycles have ended, and we now enter 9 hell periods of 52 years each. The last hell period was 1935 to 1987. That, of course, recounting quickly, historically, was worldwide depression. The beginning of World War II was in Africa as the Italians invaded Ethiopia, and in Asia as the Japanese invaded Manchuria. In 1935, in the midst of worldwide depression, World War II began. And of course, World War II was followed by a Cold War, by an increasing ecological crisis, and a very threatening and diverse set of not only ecological crises, but of variety of inequalities in the world of human affairs. Inequalities among men and women, and of course, economic opportunity, educational opportunity, and we are in a world, my sense of 2012, my personal insight, it is a time out of time. We are between world ages, and indeed, Caroline, where are the new teachers, the new prophets to guide us, or are we going to continue on a path to not only the mass extinction of other species that has been going on for an accelerating period of certainly since 1935, and the increase in inequality since 1935, And we are in a time of not only war, but ceaseless preparations for more war. We might be on a path to extinction, like the Native Americans, where of the hundreds of tribes, and some say over 1,000 languages once spoken, we have only the survivorship. And in North and South America, more survivorship than anywhere in Europe or Asia. There are, of course, surviving indigenous cultures in Africa. I am not.
We're on our way out, Jerome. We'll have to do part 3 through 800. And then just slipping in the last minute here, I have a wonderful author lined up. His name escapes me, but who wrote a novel in which Montezuma kills Cortez? And we go, oh, that's okay. The Bunny Planet history rewrite, and many other things. And Cortez, of course, shows up when the Morning Star is returning, and it's supposed to be Quetzalcoatl, and they mistake the man for the god. Let us not mistake the human for the god. It's meant to be born in everyone. But thank you. I give you the last whatever it is minute, half a minute. You were doing a beautiful thing there, and I couldn't help myself. But we can come back to the Kayanarakawa, the great law of peace, and we might amplify that in the fullness of time. And Ben Franklin. So a wishing. Do you have a 10-second
wishing for more togetherness, more unity, that the people of the world begin to understand there are no enemies. We are allies of one another. We must. We must honor one another.
Beautiful. We're
that
tossing addiction to having an enemy into the cauldron. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Always my companion, my astro animist, anarcho ally, Jerome McGeorge, wonderful, wonderful denizen of Viroqua, Wisconsin, and the world. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, Skookum Bordup. I'm Caroline Casey, Coyote Network News. You can find it on Patreon as well. And we will reconvene next week. Whoa. Oh, whoa.